Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 35 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and I see we have a great panel already up here today. I see Jordan on the Operation Libertas handle, Gabe Lord, Texas Toast, Jacob. Good morning, gentlemen. How was your weekend?
A little bit busy, but totally worth it.
Actually, Jordan, do you want to kind of just jump right in and give us an update of what's going on with Gabriel or Operation Gabriel?
Yeah, absolutely. So real quick, I want to caveat something because I think I said this on Friday that I was heading in Tuesday as in tomorrow, but it's going to be the following week now. I'm going to stay back. Shane and Randy are already deployed. We've got at least one other like BV in our inner circle that's going in today. I'm going to stay back for like a week, and basically as they give me the up-to-date reports, I'm going to try to source material and get it collected. We actually have convoys leaving out of Nashville or west of Nashville today that are bringing supplies that we're getting them connected with our guys on the ground. So from now until next week, supplies are going to keep moving to our guys on the front lines to get this stuff to where it needs to go. Quick update on what Shane has done in the last 24 hours. He got into Burnsville, North Carolina yesterday, delivering Meshtastics, training those guys up on how to use them and set them up. And so they're actively setting up a alternate comms network there, which is going to help all these operators out there getting the job done, getting them to be able to relay messages to get needed supplies to where they, you know, an actual location where they need to go to.
Just to explain for everybody who doesn't or is not familiar, Meshtastic is just a long range communication, correct?
Yeah, so it works over the ham radio spectrum, except there's usually that you need a license for, but there's this little sliver that you can use that it's for experimental radio communication stuff. And Meshtastic is an open source device. It works on just like a couple of AA batteries, very low power, but it can shoot messages, text messages out extremely far. And when you have multiple ones of these, they relay through each other. And so you get 10 of them set up in this area, and you can, even though the first one in the chain can't reach the last one in the chain directly, it'll bounce through all these different devices to get to that last node in the network. It's very easy to use, very good interface. They're very cheap. They're just relatively hard to get. These are things we sourced before the Nashville conference. And luckily it was just fortuitous that I still had like 50 of these devices on hand to be able to push out for this. There's a saying that I've learned in the Jack Carr books. It's, luck is the residue of preparation. So thanks to guys like Gary who got us spun up on ham radios and Meshtastic devices months ago, and that we've been talking about this stuff for months, and we've got the equipment and we've been, you know, actively using them and trying to get people to adopt them because of all that preparation. It's just so serendipitous that now we have them and we're able to deploy them for an emergency like this. It's just absolutely amazing. So Shane is doing that. He's also delivered 5 generators out to locations that need them, both for people that are like other veterans that we're linking up with to run these operations, as well as getting stuff out to people who need it. They were conducting a mission this morning where they were taking a Starlink, a Meshtastic, and a generator by helicopter to a family that was in need of all this stuff to help communicate. And I think now that that family gets that, now they can become a node in this network that from their property, we can now start reaching out to other people and figuring out what's needed. So this kind of stuff just continues to replicate. I had an active duty Green Beret reach out to me today, or to our larger group. And so he's like, hey, I'm willing to take personal leave to go help with this. And it's just amazing. And to have somebody with his skill set to be able to come in and help either run operations in Burnsville, North Carolina, or We've got a guy who's just set up in Little Switzerland Inn, that's pretty isolated from a lot of stuff, but from that location, they can reach out and touch a lot of other areas, and they have National Guard units landing Chinooks on the lawn of the inn to help bring in supplies. So from there, we can partner up with the National Guard to then take supplies even further by foot to areas that they can't get Chinooks in. So just going out there and being a force multiplier for guys that are already on the ground and National Guard units that are now trying to do as much as they can. It's just absolutely amazing, like what we can do. The human spirit, the American spirit that is just coming alive right now is literally breathtaking. I mean, it keeps amazing me.
And it's definitely worth mentioning, like, again, we couldn't do a lot of this stuff without your help and your support. I don't know if you all know this, but we made a post last night. We've raised over $80,000 for Bitcoin veterans to go out here and do these supplies. And someone extremely generous donated an entire Bitcoin. So it really helped us out on this. So again, I want to make sure everyone understands that we have guys on the ground, but we couldn't be doing it without your help and your support. And so we really appreciate it. And I want to give big thanks to everybody who's even just retweeted the links. So again, we have the link up there in the nest. If you all could, if you haven't donated yet, even, you know, we accept Bitcoin or fiat, but even just a couple sats goes a long way. But the most important thing is just getting this message out. So just retweet that link and get it out there, tag people, and let's get this movement continuing. Some of the things that we still need to focus in on with the funds that we're raising is warm clothing and winter gear. It's starting to get colder out there in the mountains. And so we're trying to make sure everyone's going to be prepared, because again, we don't know when things will go back to normal. So space heaters, extension cords, power strips, fuel for heaters, propane camp stoves, and generators are some of the big items. And then we're going to be using some of those funds for wasp spray. With the destruction of everything, a lot of these bees and hornets have lost their homes. They're just kind of flying around everywhere, getting affecting some of our operations. So that's what some of the funds are going to be used for in the near term. So again, go ahead, Gabe.
I just want to add also, a lot of people are experiencing some negative allergic reactions from the bee stings that are happening. And if anybody listening has a connection with any healthcare systems that would be willing to donate some EpiPens, then that would be extremely helpful, because it's a real problem up there. There are swarms of bees, yellow jackets, wasps, just all over the place stinging people. And that, you know, not only is it impacting the people who have already been devastated, but also the workers out there that are trying to get things recovered. And so that's it's turning into a pretty serious problem. And it's just one of those things. You never really, it's kind of hard to foresee that kind of a development taking place. But I just want to add also that the person that donated the whole coin, it was an anonymous donation. And so, this community has come together in a way that is just, I mean, it's humbling and it's astonishing. And it's just, these are the best people on the planet. I am convinced of that. So no one is looking for credit on anything. They just want to contribute and they just want to help out. And this really, it really is a community effort. And everybody who's listening, who's giving, who's sharing, who's retweeting and posting, it's just, you're making it happen. And so thank you for doing what you're doing, because it's not going to happen any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I want to thank everybody for helping us. And that's, that's why we do this show every Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock Eastern, is to spread the message and show what impact we can have on everybody, like just starting with local communities, going out, and then just the grassroots movements. That's really the purpose. And that's our mission statement, is making sure we can go out there and show the power of what Bitcoin can do. Like, I've only met a handful of you in real life. The rest of you are just, names on a computer screen and voices that come talk to me in the morning. But together we have a huge impact. So let's show the world what we're capable of. And let's make sure we spread this message and going out there and making an impact on these local small communities. Again, if we want to be the change and make the change, we have to start small. We can't change the entire country at once. We've got to go in there and with a ground roots, boots on the ground, shaking hands and making people understand what our mission is. So again, I want to thank everybody. And if you're new out there, please reach out to us, send us a direct message, get in contact, and we'll point you in the right direction. So again, I want to thank everybody. Jordan.
Hey, Coleman, can I say one more thing?
100%.
So when I just want to let everybody know, when many of you are donating to the ZapRite page that we've got set up, you're leaving notes and you're putting comments in there. Continue doing that. We're sharing those comments with our teams who are working on this, and it means a lot. Morale is important. This is going to be a heavy task, and it's going to be burdensome, and it's going to be difficult, and it's a lot of work. And so many of you are leaving encouraging comments. You're typing out entire prayers and putting them in there in the notes. So keep that up. I'm just going to let you know, for those that have already shared those, it matters. It's important. And we appreciate that too.
Yes. Thank you for hitting on that, Gabe. It is important, and it's good for morale. It's just those little things that just make you, you know, feel good about your day's work.
As somebody on the outside, just want to say, you know, thanks to the guys that are actually volunteering time and stuff, getting out there and doing something about it. You know, it's relatively, at least, you know, it's a lot easier for me to like throw some money at something or than to actually get on the ground and do something. So it's nice to know that, like, you know, there's somebody, you know, physically putting time and effort and sweat into it. So, you know, appreciate all those guys that are out there doing something.
Thank you, Yomar.
Yeah. And on that note, like, I mean, so everyone that's listening knows, seriously, like not everyone has the time to give up. Luckily, a lot of us, whether it's because of Bitcoin or just other reasons, have the time to go do things. Other people don't have the time, but they have the money and they're donating generously. Other people don't have the time or the money, but retweeting and getting the message out is just as important as all the other stuff. So if that's all you can do, like, understand that that is a huge contribution to this effort. Like, just being here, listening and getting informed and sharing all this information is extremely vital. So thank you.
Yes. Just spreading the message, retweeting that does go a long way. So there was some controversy that happened Friday evening and then over the weekend in regards to FEMA and how they're spending their money. The White House press secretary came on TV and stated that no, Biden did not direct any of the FEMA money to go to illegal immigrants. She said that Trump had did that. It wasn't the Biden administration. And this is less than 24 hours after Mayorkas came out and said that there wasn't going to be enough money for FEMA to fund another hurricane, which coincidentally, there is a major hurricane, Hurricane Milton, rolling through the Gulf right now into Florida. So that'll be hitting on Thursday. So there, remember that the government is not here to save you. It's the people, it's your local community that's here to save you. And just to kind of give you a mindset of where their agenda is, I'm going to have Jacob play a really short clip just to get you all fired up about where FEMA wants to direct the majority of their attention in the crisis going on. So Jacob, go ahead and roll.
Sparked a few things in my mind, thinking about preparedness and how you said, you know, LGBTQIA people and people who have been disadvantaged already are struggling. They already have their own things to deal with. So you add a disaster on top of that, it's just compounding on itself. And I think that is maybe the why of why we're having these discussions, is because it isn't being talked about. It isn't being socialized. We're not paying attention to this community. Thank you so much. Maggie.
Thank you. Yeah, there are a couple of things that are intersecting in my mind here. One of them is the culture of emergency management as an organization, as an industry.
So she just goes on and talks more about how we should direct more funds and more help specifically to one group. And that was the LGBT, rest of the alphabet group. To me, that makes me extremely upset. You shouldn't single out one single group. We should worry about the people that need it the most. And it just, it shows you directly where the alliance of these government agencies are. So I just wanted to share that because I saw it rolling through over the weekend and it really upset me. So I figured you all should be as upset as me after hearing that. Does anybody have any comments on that clip before we move on to the next thing? Okay. But I did want to talk about the Hurricane Milton that is rolling through the Gulf right now. Right now, it currently sits at a Category 4 hurricane, 150 mile per hour winds. It's going to be hitting Tampa Bay directly. And so there's going to be the largest evacuation in Florida since Hurricane Irma in 2017. So it's already going to be, Hurricane Helene already put a strain on the southeast. And this one might be that 1-2 punch that causes a lot of destruction. And so I see we have macro minutes up here. And I know that you were posting some charts on the hurricane. So do you want to talk a little bit more about that macro?
Yeah. Hey guys, how's it going? Definitely been following this for a while now. I posted about it probably like 6 days ago, I want to say. Granted, it was a little bit of a flippant post because I was frustrated by all of the conspiracy theories regarding weather manipulation and all that stuff that were floating around. I think they're largely ridiculous. But I won't go on that tangent right now. So anyways, this has been known about, if you follow hurricane modeling at all, it's been pretty evident that something like this was going to happen up to about maybe 7-8 days ago. And it's just been pretty well confirmed that exactly what we were thinking was possible is definitely going to happen. I think one of the crazy things for me is just the rapid intensification. It dropped like 18 millibars of pressure in an hour, which if you're a hurricane nerd or if you know anything about, you know, what the barometric pressure relative to the storm strength means, it's very, very rapid intensification. But you're definitely looking at a major hurricane landfall in Florida at this point. It's just a matter of where exactly is it going to hit, right? So there's no question in my mind that an impact or a hurricane landfall is going to happen around Tampa Bay somewhere. But I think the silver lining positive to this would be the high pressure over like the Virginia area right now is probably just going to push it offshore after Florida. So it's likely North Carolina won't see a whole lot from this, but yeah, it's still going to be bad for anybody on the west coast of Florida because it's rare that that area gets a strong hurricane landfall. So anyways, yeah, I'm happy to nerd out about any direction you want to go with it, unless you want to talk HAARP stuff because it just frustrates me. So maybe I could give a counterpoint to that, but anyways, I'll shut up.
No, you're good. I appreciate the insight on it. So one of the biggest things I saw trending was hurricanes don't start like this in the Gulf. They never go east once they're there. But in some of the charts that you did post, you proved that there have been hurricanes that do that. So it's fun going down these rabbit holes where there could be government, you know, influence on storms. But it's important that we try and stay on track and not believe everything.
Yeah, let's just touch on those two things real quick, right? For one, here's the chart that I shared that you were referencing that just shows the various storms that have formed in the Gulf and then moved to the east. To me, this is no different from a storm forming in the Caribbean, moving up into the Gulf, and then turning to the east, as they always do. Most people just, you know, they're preliminary understanding of the storms is that they have to form in the Caribbean because that's statistically the norm, but it's by no means out of possibility for them to form in the Gulf and move east, as this chart shows. It's just rare. And I think the broad point that I'd like to make here is humans' lifespan on geologic timescales are just minuscule, right? We're not around to see what Mother Nature is capable of. And we're lucky because Mother Nature is capable of some pretty nasty stuff, right? And most of it, we just aren't around to see. The last time a hurricane formed in this area and made landfall in the Tampa area, it was 1848, I think. And so obviously none of us or even our grandparents were around for that, but it doesn't mean it's unprecedented. So that word always frustrates me. It's like, just because you weren't alive when something happened doesn't mean that it's Cal Farts or the government making it happen now. It's just a rare weather event. And there are so many weather events that occur every single year. Every single year, you're going to have some sort of unprecedented, quote, rare weather event. But there were plenty of times in the past where the Appalachian Mountains got a lot of rainfall dumped on them. In Virginia, it happened twice, in 1969 and in 1972. Hurricanes Agnes and Camille both dumped like 20 inches of rain on the Appalachians in Virginia. It flooded the city of Richmond. You can go back and look at pictures of it. It was catastrophic, but even now, that's out of recent memory. So I think it's just... the one thing that I would encourage everybody to do is, before you claim something is unprecedented or being influenced by Cal Farts or the government, maybe just go back and look at the history of storms a little bit, and you'll probably find that, oh, wait, this actually has happened. I just maybe didn't know about it, right? So that's where I would leave it, is until you can actually have a thorough understanding of the history of weather in certain areas, which I do because that's just something I nerd out about. A lot of the time you're going to be thinking, wow, this never happens. It's like, well, it does. You just literally don't know about it. So I'll stop there.
No, that was perfect. I appreciate that, Macro. And that's actually a perfect segue into the next part I want to go into. So Jacob, in a couple of minutes, I'm going to ask you to play the next clip we have. And the importance of being able to have these discussions is to be able to see both sides of the conversation. If you limit free speech or limit what can be said online, you never hear the flip side to any argument, and that narrative can change and will change with whoever's in power. And so I want to play a clip, two clips. First one is going to be Hillary Clinton, just in an interview. And for those of you who don't know, I absolutely despise this woman. I think she's probably the lowest scum of this earth. And this is what she has to say and how she views how you should be able to speak. So Jacob, go ahead and roll the first one.
And if the platforms, whether it's Facebook or Twitter X or Instagram or TikTok, whatever they are, if they don't moderate and monitor the content, we lose total control. And it's not just the social and psychological effects, it's real harm. But
if we don't moderate and monitor the content, we lose total control.
We're going to lose control.
They absolutely should. And that is the, you know, no one wants hate speech. Nobody wants speech that belittles anybody. But the way you counteract that and the way that you eliminate it is by having better speech. Don't limit speech. Allow other people to talk over them. Allow people to show the other side of it. And that's how you conquer this. Nothing is ever achieved by limiting or not allowing people to speak. It's so disgusting. I really can't stand this woman. I wish nothing but evil upon her. And so I just can't stand it. I hate this narrative that's going on. And she's not the only one. About 2 weeks ago, Harris came out and said the exact same thing. If we're not able to enforce the social media platforms by limiting what we want, then they should go to jail. And she was referencing Elon Musk in that. And on this next clip, I'm going to go ahead and roll into before we start taking comments. So Jacob, give me that thumbs up when you're ready. Elon Musk attended Trump's rally over the weekend, and definitely recommend going back and catching the highlights of it. But here's a short little clip and how Elon views.
And free speech. Free speech is the bedrock of democracy. And if people don't know what's going on, if they don't know the truth, how can you make an informed vote? You must have free speech in order to have democracy. That's why it's the First Amendment. And the Second Amendment is there to ensure that we have the First Amendment.
So the First Amendment and Second Amendment are important for our existence. And so I definitely want to get some thoughts on these two conversations and why they're so important. So it looked like Jordan, you wanted to say something?
No, I don't think so. Which is unusual.
I probably, I'll say that before even played the Hillary Clinton clip, I knew I wasn't going to like it because Hillary Clinton is one of the worst people on the planet. So that was an easy one to dislike. As for Musk, like, I don't know. I question his sincerity sometimes. I do think he's by far doing more for the First Amendment than, you know, the other platforms. But he wavers from time to time. The other side of it, and this goes for Trump too, like, there's benefit of the rhetoric, even if they don't believe it, because of the short attention span of the American voter. You know, they hear the headlines. So, you know, when Trump and Vance are saying, like, they're anti-war and they're pro-free speech and this and that, you know, the average voter, like, they hear that, they believe it, and hopefully that sticks with them. And even if they, you know, the sincerity of that from them is, especially from like Trump and Vance, I think is more questionable than the sincerity from Musk. Like, I think Musk is, like, sincerely cares for maybe the First Amendment because he spent $44 billion to buy Twitter. But I think he's just in, like, I think there's, like, complications because of his other business ventures or something like that. I don't know. But, you know, like, my hope is that, like, that rhetoric sticks, right? Like, America first, why are we funding these other countries? You know, that's, like, the headline for, like, the rhetoric and, like, the, you know, they talk about free speech a lot and all that stuff. My hope is that that becomes, like, the platform for the Republican Party, and it actually becomes more pure as it gets more ingrained in there. Like, right now, there's a lot of asterisks on it if you actually listen to what they say. But my hope is that, like, that top line kind of leads to something better pure again. Use the same word again over and over, but you get the idea there.
No, but I'm not giving a free pass to Elon, but I think he's doing a really good job championing the importance of having free speech. And yes, his track record on it is very controversial. In certain situations, he's limited free speech for different countries. But as it stands right now, like, we need his voice out there. We need him to be talking about this. And one of the other things that he really hit on was the importance of having a fair election. And he hit on Governor Newsom's new law he passed where they're banning IDs when you vote. So in case you didn't know, you're not allowed to require any form of ID in California when you're voting, which is unreal because you need an ID to buy alcohol. You need an ID to drive a vehicle. So all of these things, like, you should already have. And just to verify you are who you are when you're casting that vote, they said it infringes upon the rights of the people.
You know what I always find interesting, and is, like, the steps that they're comfortable making you go through for to exercise, you know, Musk mentioned the Second Amendment, but to exercise, you know, your right to bear arms, you know, you need an ID, you need a background check, you need this, you need that, depending on your states, you need all these, like, hoops, like, clearly unconstitutional hoops to jump through. I forget who said it, but, like, you know, there's no second rate rights, you know what I mean? Like, there's no, like, second tier rights. Like, a natural right is a natural right. Like, there's no one that's better than the other or more superior than the other. So, you know, if we say, like, okay, you know, you need an ID just to make sure you're, like, an American and when you're buying a rifle or something. Okay, then, like, how do you not need an ID to vote? You know, like, if you can do it for one, like, you can't do it for the other. It's pretty crazy. And it's not even, like, an infringement, right? Like, asking somebody for their ID to vote, you're not infringing. And it gets a little complicated when you think of it in terms of the Second Amendment because they do try to use it as a barrier. But, like, just producing an ID to say, like, yes, this is me buying whatever I'm buying or this is me voting. I don't know. I think that I don't see that as an infringement, even when it comes to the Second Amendment. Like, if somebody asks for an ID, you know, you want to make sure you're selling it to who you think you're selling it to in case anything happens. I don't see that as, like, infringing. Now all the permitting and all that stuff is a different, you know, if you have to get a voter's permit, then yeah, you could probably argue that's infringement. Even though the results of, like, more informed voters would probably be a lot better off for us. even though the government would probably make it like make you vote a special way for that permit, but you get the idea.
Yeah, no, it's common sense that you should have an ID when you're going to be casting a vote. And again, it's not infringing on any rights. It's just something that should be done.
Yeah, and the inverse is actually an infringement if you think about it. You know, we talk about inflation, right? I mean, it's basically voter inflation, right? If you're allowing anybody to cast a vote in there, you're diluting the vote of the actual citizens in that district. So, you know, that actually is an infringement if you allow for those fraudulent votes to get through. And, you know, I've seen like the argument, like, you know, we don't know how much there really is, but if you make a system easy enough for people to fraudulently vote, like, there's going to be fraud. It's just the way, you know, human nature is. They'll take advantage of the opportunities that are there. So I think the best thing is just to close that. It's a very simple thing to close. Just have your ID, you know, like, there's, you know, if you can't get an ID, then, I mean, you really can't even function in this society. So the argument that, like, oh, like, certain people don't have IDs, it's preposterous, you know?
It is. And you should be a citizen. I think that should also be thrown in there. Like, non-citizens voting in any type of election is ass backwards. Like, there's no other country in the world where you can do that. I can't walk into a different country and cast a vote if I'm not a citizen of that country. So why? Again, it's just, we know why they're doing it. It's to make sure that they get the votes that they need and allow people in the country. So they're serving a purpose for it. But again, I have a hard time when people push back that, no, you should allow everyone to vote. No, only citizens should.
That's crazy. I've actually never heard somebody say that in real life.
You're right. I've never seen it in real life. I've only seen it in the Twitterverse. But I'm sure there's people out there that support it.
I mean, like, even like the way the census is conducted, like to allocate like house seats and stuff like that. Even that, I think, is questionable and might be worth like examining. I think you would need an amendment to change it, so it's not likely to ever happen. But I think it's interesting. Like, it'd be an interesting discussion to see take place anyway, just because, like, I don't think our founders ever envisioned the amount of, you know, illegal aliens like living in the United States. So, like, you know, you could have, you know, that's, I think, part of the reason why these like sanctuary states are the way they are. You know, they were losing population, so they get the, you know, the illegal people to come there. And then on the census, it doesn't distinguish between citizens and non-citizens. So it helps them maintain their power and stuff in the House and maintain their seats and stuff like that.
I also don't think the founders envisioned the highly densulated pockets throughout the country and how that could affect everything as well. My point of view is that the country is too large. It's too big, and that nothing will ever get done that's meaningful, because it's just you're too divided across so many issues. And it doesn't matter, even if the whole country was in harmony and everyone got along, the people in the South are going to have different views and opinions and needs than the people in the Northeast or the Northwest.
I would argue that they did envision that, and that's why, like, the federal government is not supposed to be this giant leviathan of a government. You know, it's supposed to be the least American people is the federal government. It's supposed to, you know, our president's supposed to be an ambassador. He's not supposed to be deciding things that impact Americans' daily life. So I think they did give us the formula to not have to worry about the differing goals or priorities of the states or cities and stuff like that. We just completely tossed out that model and now have this giant leviathan government that's, you know, when we're electing a president now, it's like we're electing who's going to rule over us, and that's not the intent. That's why I think politics has become so toxic, because of the amount of power that we've given to the federal government. And even at this point, the one thing I would say is states are too large. I think that states should be broken up, in part because of those large population centers. You know, if you live in rural California or rural New York, you know, you don't have a say really in how the state is run, because your goals and what works for you is completely different than what works for the people making the decisions, which are the people that live in the cities. So I would argue that, like, there should be, like, some states might benefit from being broken up, you know, just overall just dismantling our federal government to make it within the bounds of the Constitution.
So I think we're on the same page then. So Yomar, do you think the country can still function as the founders envisioned, as large as we are right now, or do you believe that we have to become smaller?
Well, the country itself, I think, can function, but we need a constitutional government. We need a government that's constrained by the Constitution. We can't have like this kind of federal government. Like there's not, even at, like I said, like at the state level, you can't find a ruler that fits for everybody in the state. So obviously we can't find a ruler that fits for everybody in the country. You know what I mean? Like we need to get rid of the power at the, ideally at the state level as well. you know, the federal level definitely has to be reduced so that the states have more power. That will be more representative. You know, the higher the number of people that are being like represented in anything, the lower like representation they actually will have. You know, like if there's just because of like the scale, like I think if you read like the initial intent, I think it's like something like a representative for like 30,000 people or something, and we have, I don't know, representative for like 750,000 people or something now. So like, you know, there's not the levels of representation that should be there. So there should be like, if I was to wave a wand and fix things, I'd break up some of the states. I would increase the number of representatives in the House of Representatives. I would, completely dismantle the federal government and make it the way it's supposed to be, you know, like just figureheads working on like trade deals. I think the simplest thing is like if you abolish the income tax and what was left of the government after a few years, that would probably be what we would need, right? Everything else is kind of superfluous and just dragging us down. The need for national defense is obviously a thing, but I don't know about like the standing federal army, because all that's resulted in is us having like wars constantly, right? So, if we return something to like the state level and then the states have to sign up for it, it also increases like the cost of it, right? Like the real cost, like the states would have to commit to it. Whereas now, like, you know, our so-called representatives don't even vote on wars. They just kind of turn the other way and let the president have free reign. So there's a lot of like flaws. But I do think that there is a way, there's a path to fixing it. And the first step in that path is reducing the power of the federal government, because they should not be so involved in people's lives. And it'll remove a lot of the toxicity in politics we see today. Once like who's in charge there doesn't really matter in the day-to-day life of Americans.
I like that. Thank you, Yomar. Really quick, I want to give a couple quick shout outs to people in the audience, people I see listening every day. Dan W, JC, Mary B, DJ Valerie, Obi, Coinfather, I see out there. The regulars, Lisa Huff, Bob Van Kirk, Wade, Montani. I really appreciate you guys listening to us. Really quick, I want to mention that the Daily Intelligence Bulletin won't be posted for the near future, just because Randy is out there, boots on the ground, so he's not having time to put that out there. So tune in to here Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, and I will cover some of the major things that Randy would cover as well. Before I move on to the next thing, did anyone have anything else they'd like to hit on about the size of government and its role?
I'm just going to post to the nest here this book. It's just the Constitutional Debates and the Anti-Federalist Papers. You can drop it after a second, but just so people see it. I encourage everybody to read that. For me, it kind of like set my expectations for like how our politicians and stuff should be. Like if you actually read through that and you read how well articulated and well thought out like the arguments were, and then you compare that to like the sound bites we have today, if you're like me, you'll be immediately disgusted, more disgusted than you were before. Because, you know, I always believed in like these are just like dumb farmers that fought for their freedom, you know, that kind of thing. But when you actually read it, it's like, you know, these guys were very educated. And like, what's most impressive is like, okay, like I guess like they've always been like, okay, these guys are well educated, they're smart. But the idea that like, you know, people try to argue that our modern politicians have to dumb things down for us. Whereas like, you know, people back then were inarguably like less educated than we are today. So if they could write for them this level of like quality, then our politicians today should be required to do at least the same. So definitely encourage you guys to pick that up and read through it. A lot of interesting stuff in there, stuff that I may have learned in the past, maybe not, but it was definitely interesting to read and learn again.
Well, thank you for posting that in the nest, sir.
Could I just make one comment on that last part? I would say it is important to recognize that they were writing to who they thought would actually be involved in running the country, and they actually didn't believe in having everybody say. They believed in people who had basically a staked ownership in the country having a say, which is why they wanted landowners to be the people who were voting. Obviously, a completely different world back then, a couple hundred years ago, but says a lot, because I think they recognized even more so the dangers of popular rule, and we're living through that now. But anyways, just an interesting contextual point that I think is missed on a lot of people now when they're talking about the levels that people used to write to in the past. I don't necessarily agree that they were writing for everybody. I think they were writing for people who were reading the stuff and making the decisions. And I don't think that your average homesteading farmer was necessarily included in that, but that's just my take.
Yeah, I think that's a fair and valid point.
Okay, let's go ahead and start moving on. Right now, some breaking news is coming out. Is Verizon is leaving a lot of their customers in the U.S. unable to make phone calls and text messages. So customers in New York, Washington, D.C., and Phoenix are reporting issues with Verizon. And they were just hit with an outage about 2 weeks ago. So just something to kind of take note of and be aware of. And some cool Bitcoin news. The mayor of Rockdale wrote an article in the local newspaper, and it was titled "Bitcoin Mining Revived My Rural Community of Rockdale." So I'll go ahead and post the link up in the nest to the article. But in the article, he stated how Rockdale was once the manufacturing hub in East Texas. They had an aluminum smelting company called Alcoa in 1952. But during 2008, when energy prices started to go really high, it unfortunately shut down the plant, and it crippled the economy of Rockdale. They lost millions of dollars in tax revenue, and they had a hard time funding their schools or parks and public works. But the Bitcoin miners came in and utilized the infrastructure that the smelting plant was utilizing. And at first, everybody in the community was very hesitant. But once the Bitcoin miners started coming in and generating more income and revenue, it's revitalized the local town. And so the mayor goes on to talk about that. Most of the employees that work at the Bitcoin miners are citizens of Rockdale. Beyond the increase in tax revenue the miners generate, they donate to local causes such as scholarships, police and fire departments. They help sponsor the youth sports and the Chamber of Commerce, and they sponsor community events like their annual Christmas tree lighting. And so he highly encourages other rural cities and counties to explore how Bitcoin miners can help their community and generate revenue. So did anybody on the panel see that article this morning or have any thoughts on it? I'm always fascinated with the mining side of Bitcoin. And I think it's something that doesn't really get talked enough with all the implications or positive impacts it can have on the world. And I think you see it a lot. I think Alex Gladstein posts a lot with what it's doing in Africa. And that to me, it just fascinates me, because everyone says that, you know, energy produces a lot of carbon. It could be bad for the environment, bad for the world. But you're taking that from, you know, a privileged viewpoint. Like if you don't have energy, like we're seeing right now in the Southeast, like it cripples everything. So you can imagine these countries that have absolutely nothing. And so there's an ability for someone to come in and implement this new technology and create power and jobs. It's fascinating. There was something, I think Gladstein did a Peter McCormick episode on what Bitcoin did. And he talked about the sudden impact of what these miners do when they bring in power infrastructure. Because the average ROI for an electric company that would decide to invest in Africa, the ROI was about 17 to 20 years before they'd break even. And now that they can incorporate Bitcoin miners to their power strategy, they get their ROI back in 3 to 5 years. And the price of electricity for those local communities drops significantly. I think the average kilowatt was like something like $90 to $1 per kilowatt hour. And once the Bitcoin miners get implemented with the power grid, it drops it down to about 20 to 30 cents per kilowatt hour, which is still really high, but it's still like 2/3 cheaper than what it currently was. So I really think that the mining side of Bitcoin is interesting. And we're going to have Bob Burnett on the show on Thursday to talk more about this. So I really want to pick his brain about where he sees things going and the implications that it could have on society. Does anybody else have anything they want to comment on that?
Nothing other than I saw it and I think it's great. I mean, anytime physical infrastructure is built and helps to revitalize an area, I'm all for it. And I think it just further reinforces the fact that any other quote crypto project is complete and utter bullshit, because it's not actually doing anything to help local communities to develop, because they don't actually use energy to enforce their proof of work. So I don't know. I just think for me, this is one of those things that's not talked about enough. It's definitely become a more popular topic on X over the past year or two, but I really think it is one of the things that truly differentiates Bitcoin from everything else. And it's, if you can't see it yet, it's going to become more and more apparent over time. And then everything else will be just in stark contrast to it. Obviously, people LARPing about actually making a better money, right? So I just love seeing stuff like this, whether it's small, medium, or large.
Yes, and you have to remember that the city of Rockdale only has a little over 5,000 people. So that like these miners coming in makes a huge impact when you're able to generate, you know, millions of dollars in tax revenue from these Bitcoin miners for a town that small. Like that's huge. It allows you to do a lot of things. So it'll be interesting to go back and see the swing in your economy 10 years out. If we're 10 years in the future, go back to this day or this time and look and just see how much has changed these little rural communities. It'll be really interesting. It's kind of like mini El Salvadors in the States.
I would say that the one point there about the tax thing, just as a Bitcoiner, kind of rubs me the wrong way, because I just never want to celebrate taxes. it's just an impulse of mine. So I think one thing that we should encourage whenever you see it is miners getting involved in their local communities, whether it's like, I don't know, sponsoring a local little league or something like that, just actually giving to the community in some sort of charitable way, other than being, you know, forced at gunpoint to pay taxes to the local municipality, who's inevitably going to not use it effectively as it could be. So I don't know. I would just always encourage, if you're running hardware somewhere, like, try to get involved with the community directly versus just saying, well, I'm paying taxes to it, so that'll help it. They'll figure it out. Because if you're ostracized by the local people, you're more likely to probably meet resistance to your operations over time. So,
no, and I agree with that. I think that these companies are definitely better at managing their funds and would do a better job than the local governments would. But there's still, again, if you're running a business, there's going to be taxes no matter what. And so it does help these schools.
That's fair.
And that's all my point was. I'm not pro-tax by any means.
Really? I thought you were up here just championing higher taxes every day. Isn't that what you're all about?
It is, because I grew up in a middle family, middle economy family. I'm sorry, I should have her speech memorized. I can use that to go into anything.
I was going
to
say, okay, Kamala.
Did you guys see? I didn't get Jacob to load the video, so I apologize, but her teleprompter went out over the weekend. And the left always gives Trump crap about just going on and talking and kind of talking in circles and how he's not good. But Kamala's teleprompter went out during a speech, and for about 30 seconds, all she does is repeat 32, because there's 32 days until the election. And it shows that there's not a single neuron firing in her brain, because she can't think of anything to say other than repeating that line. So I encourage you, I'll see if I can find the video and I'll post it up in the Nest. But it's important to have leaders that can think on their feet and don't rely on others for talking points. And that's where I think these long format interviews are really good. So something like our show, or if you want to settle, go to like Joe Rogan and talk on there. But this way you can get an idea, because you can't BS your way for, you know, 2 hour interview. The real you will come out. So I think that's the way we should start moving with these for everybody who's going to have a seat in office. There's no other way to kind of find out who they are than sitting down and listening to them talk. Unscripted.
I think that is exactly what Hillary Clinton is scared about.
I think that the debate should be like an SAT test, right? They sit down, they're given some questions, they have to write down their answers, then they like publish it while they get a little break, and then they bring them back, and then they discuss like how terrible their and uninformed their answers were. I think that'll be like the best way to really see what they're capable of articulating there, because I think maximum suffering for whoever's trying to run for president is ideal. They need something, you know?
Yeah. And what I'd really like to see is during the debate between the vice presidents, J.D. Vance and Waltz, Waltz was scribbling down every single thing. So I would have really liked to see his paper to see what he was jostling down or jotting down, just because it was so fun. If you guys haven't seen that debate, I definitely encourage you to go catch the highlights, but J.D. Vance just mopped the floor with him, and Waltz just looked like someone who was like, oh my gosh, that's a great talking point. And maybe that's what he's taking down. I'm going to write down these talking points so I can share with my team, because he's making really good arguments. But just he's a fat guy. His jaws were just kind of moving around when he looked shocked. It's kind of comedic in that aspect. So definitely, if you don't really care for politics, it's just good to go back there and just kind of look at his reactions, because it was it was pretty funny. Another article that's resurfacing was released by Yahoo Finance this morning, and it was talking about an article published by Morningstar back of this year. And Morningstar is a prediction, or they run a company where they can run predictive models. And so they were running about a model on retirement and how that it's affecting Americans. And in their model, they predicted that about 45% of American households are going to run short of money in their retirement. So only have a couple minutes before we have to go ahead and close, but I'd like to get anyone's thoughts on how does Bitcoin fix this? Because again, that's the purpose of this, of our message, is how Bitcoin can fix these issues. So someone other than myself, if you want to go ahead and take over, and how does Bitcoin help prevent these American households from running out of money?
I mean, the short answer is it gives us a way to save, right? Like that's something that we haven't had since really 1913. You know, you can't save in the dollar, right? So, you know, the only way, and it's a little bit better for like homeowners and stuff like that, because you do like your house will inflate with the currency. But you know, especially for like the lower income people that don't own homes, or maybe they're in a city and they don't own a home. You know, it's really hard to find something to put your money into. And then you're playing in the stock markets. That should in theory inflate, with the currency as well. But if you choose poorly, you know, if you're doing the stock market shitcoin game, you know, you're going to have a bad time. So, you know, Bitcoin is something outside of that. You know, it's something that, you know, back to the basics of it, there's a fixed quantity. You know, it's going to grow value, as the currency, the volume of currency inflates, you know, Bitcoin will continue to grow in value. So it's that store of value that we're always looking for. So, you know, I did a hack job of explaining it, but you know, you could read any of Saifedean's books, and they'll do a much better job than I can do. Bitcoin Standard, especially, I think, is the one I always point people to, even just as like an economics book, not necessarily even a Bitcoin book. The economics lessons in like the first half or three quarters of the book are worth reading alone, and then you get into the Bitcoin aspect.
Yeah, definitely. No, you did a great job explaining that, Omar. I appreciate that. And again, with Bitcoin, you don't rely on anybody else. It's decentralized. With even the stock market or anything else, you have someone else that's in control. So you can always get rugged. There's a lot of risks. And Bitcoin is just that long-term thinking. You know, I'm just going to hold on to this, and then I'll utilize it in the future when I need to. No one can debase it. No one can take it from me. So it's extremely important in that aspect. I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo supplies at blacksheepammo.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Punchblade, I saw you guys in the audience. Good morning. And make sure you stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate at punchblade.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. So we're about to start wrapping up. There's a couple more things I wanted to hit on before we get closing comments. Bitcoin Alaska is going to be July 5th and 6th of next year. We strongly recommend getting there a little early, coming around the 1st of July and stay till about the 7th. There's going to be a lot of extracurricular activities going on. This is going to be a family-friendly conference. So a lot of things to do for children and the spouses. So make sure you go out there, start booking your hotels right now. That's one of the things, Wade, who's in charge of it, seeing the audience, Wade, he's strongly recommending get your hotels. The hotels will run out first. So again, make sure you're going out there, put in your calendar. As we get more information and things finalized, we'll start releasing it more here every day on the spaces. But I personally am really looking forward to that conference. It's going to be a lot of fun. If you could go back into the nest as one of the first couple of things we posted, if you could go ahead and, retweet, share the link to our donation page for Operation Gabriel. It really helps us out. I want to thank everybody who's supported us with this, whether it was just by retweeting it or donating money to it. It does mean a lot to us, and we'll keep you updated as we continue with this effort. Does anybody else have anything else they'd like to share? Gabe, Macro, Eomar?
No, I'm good. Thanks for having me up.
Yeah, well, thank you, gentlemen, for coming on. And I'll go ahead and we'll wrap it up here today. Again, we're going to do this tomorrow, 10 o'clock Eastern. Tomorrow we have a featured guest. It'll be Matthew Lysak of Fiat Foods. He'll be joining us. So I'm really looking forward to that. Make sure you retweet that link. I'll be posting later today. It'll be a really good conversation. If you haven't read the book yet, it is not fascinating. It's actually really sad to see how corrupt the current system is. But we'll be able to ask a lot of questions, and I'm really looking forward to it. So that'll be tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And on Thursday, we're going to have Bob Burnett of Barefoot Mining joining us as well. So two featured guests this week. Join us tomorrow night for the Bitcoin video podcast. Gabe, really quick, I didn't ask you earlier, put you on the spot. Who's today or tomorrow's guest?
We're not going to be having a guest on tomorrow night. Our focus right now is on the efforts up in North Carolina. And so we are deciding how we're going to best utilize that time, and we'll keep everybody posted.
All right, perfect. So stay tuned for more details to roll out with that. And that's going to be everything. So get out there, get on the mission, spread the message, spread that link. If you guys could, please make sure we're getting this out there, and go have a great day and crush it.